I remember they used for something.
Well, what did people do in Cochrane's those days to have a good time?
Oh, seems you would dance, sing, native dances. Potlatching and stuff.
A lot of people making songs in those days? A lot of people making songs, like for potlatch?
Oh, yeah. Did you hear some of them? At 10, no, anyway. New Ladder and Kaikuk is the same.
Did you ever make songs for potlatch?
No. I was considered as a white man when I went to different villages.
So, those days, people that were half were usually considered white men, huh?
Lots of people considered me as a white man. But I talk to the natives just as fluently as they do.
Well, you pretty well could talk both languages then.
Yeah. I learned the Eskimo language too when I was on Juniper Creek and St. Michael's and Nome. I learned some of the Lap language too. And this, my stepfather, Bill Dahlquist, he was a Swede. I learned quite a few words in that Swede language, too.
Sounds like it's pretty handy for getting along. Pretty handy to get to know all those languages, huh? Was that very hard to learn those?
Too, not very hard. Yeah, I learned the Eskimo language pretty fast. Their language is easier to talk than the Indian language. The Indian language, you got to twist your tongue every such way to. And you can't, it has been written, but I can write in this language, but in other words, I couldn't twist my tongue enough to get the right word. But this fellow from I don't know where he is now, he's at Fairbanks, I guess. David something.
David Henry?
Uh-huh. That's probably he's a regular Indian. He met me down here at had a cabin up the hill here. I stayed up from the store, the old store building. My wife told me there's a white man coming in the house. I said, let him come in. And I'd greet him, and he'd answer me in native, and I thought it was an Indian. I was blind. He talked all the way with me in Indian, and I was talking to him in English. I thought he was a white man, but I found out he studied up the language. He'd been over to Alcacket. He stayed down here at Cochrane for part of putting there a year, but then that's while I was there. When everybody died off and the people all scattered, some to Tanner, some to Fairbanks, some out to the Anchorage. And the rest of them here. I counted the population of Cochrane. This was the year before I married. I counted over 130, about 130 people at Cochrane. Children and all.
That would have been about
1928? Yeah, about that time.
Were there very many people that could speak Eskimo and Indian and English?
No, not amongst nothing Yukon, upper Yukon anyway. There may be lower Yukon at the mouth and Holy Cross. There's some very few that can talk. Not really. It's just a slang word or bad word. Only that the people from around here use.
So why do you think it was that you learned those languages so easy?
How do I think that I learned the language?
Yeah.
Well, because I was amongst them. Some of the herders would go from one herd to another several times a year to pick out, to sort out those that stray. Pick them out, rope them, and take them back into their herd. I remember Shinrock Mary, the reindeer queen, they call her, between St. Michael's and Unalakleet. She had a herd of reindeer, and she was married to two men. And in the corner of her building, there would be a 50-gallon barrel of a whiskey barrel with seal oil, fresh seal oil. And over the lid of that barrel would be an army cup. It hold a quart, big cup. Every morning we get up, each one of us go over to the barrel and dip out a cup full and drink a cup of seal oil every morning. There it was kind of religion with her. She said, if you don't drink no seal oil, you'll never be a man. Well, before I left the coast, I was a regular Eskimo. I wanted seal meat and seal oil, but I couldn't drink that old rank stuff. I drank a full quart of the seal oil every morning at Shinrock Mary's.
How did she spell her name, Shinrock?
Spell?
Yeah.
S-I-N-R-O-C-K.
How was it she was married to two men?
Well, she was married to one of them, but they both lived with her.
They got along pretty good?
Yeah. She tell one fellow what are her chores in the morning, and the other fellow, either one of them, and they done whatever she bid. She sat on the rock, and she was a short woman, but she must have been 5 or 6 feet wide. When she sits down to rest, she has a rope from the ceiling to a big, great big chair that's specially made for her. And she lets herself down easy on that rocking chair, and when she gets up, she gets a hold of that rope. She weighs about 400 or 500 pounds, I guess.
So you stayed in her house for a while?
Yeah, while we're at her sorting out the reindeer.
How many guys would it take to run one of those herds?
Oh, in the winter months, it's just one fellow could handle them. I handled them alone, even though I was a kid. They don't travel. They're just in their country anyway. They're at home anywhere. We moved 3 times a year, summer camp in the fall and the winter.
What would you do each one of those places?
What?
What would you do when you got to summer camp?
The reindeer, you mean?
Yeah, what would you have to do with them in summer camp?
Oh, they took care of themselves. In this time, we have to circle around the herd. Should bunch them up a little. And then for about 8 hours, they'd be left alone. There were 23 or 24,000 reindeer in the herd that I worked in. So the reindeer was at home, and they didn't want to stampede or go run off.
What kind of a place would you have that camp at? Was there a river there or something?
In the winter?
In the summertime.
On the coast. Soon as the sun got pretty hot, or mosquitoes or horse flies got sick, they'd come in the sea. Gee, which you'd see for miles along the beach, you'd see nothing but horns. They stand all day in the water. And you see them, nothing but heads and horns.
They never got drowned in the ocean?
Mm-mm.
Didn't have big waves right there then?
Well, there's big waves to do. Then the flies, the mosquitoes ain't so thick, they'd graze inland a little ways. But when it's calm, they all head for the sea.
So how long do you stay there before you head off to fall camp?
June, July, August. We go a little further inland, and in the winter time we go about 35 miles inland further. We do that especially for their feeding ground. Inland is thicker moss. There we make sit there out of any bulls, wild bulls or castrated bulls. He was the first year I was afraid of some reindeer in the fall of the year, especially. They're bullying that time, and any bulls would come after me, but I'd carry in my jumper pouch full of gravel. When a bull gets close to me looking for a fight, and I know I can't handle him, but I just throw little gravel on their horns, and they shake their head, and that takes a fight out of them. And after the first year, I was ready for any bull to come at me. I could handle them then. You got to know how to get the hold there when they come up to you, and you got to be quick. Twist it, throw them on their side. And they'd get up, and you'd leave them and stand away, and they wouldn't come at you again. Once you throw them, they're licked.
So Seems like they'd be pretty strong, though. Didn't they ever throw you?
Oh, no. They're small animal.
They're about the same size as caribou?
Caribou is a little larger. You've seen the caribou, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
I notice up here at Cochrane's, you can tell caribou in the herd. He'd be head over the reindeer. He'd be looking around, especially when he sees man. He stays right in the center of the herd until he gets a chance to run out. Yeah, by golly, I started working at her very early, and I was considered as a tough man, tough boy. I could do anything, especially at New Lazarus, the boys. There's about 60 or 70 boys there. None of them ever beat me at anything we've ever done.
What sort of contest do you have? You have boxing and stuff like that too?
Oh, sometimes. We played out on the river on moonlight night. We played caribou.
How do you do that?
With many, many boys lost his mitt, but we throw a mitt and we hit one fellow and you're down, you're dead. We'd run all over the river all night long. We'll play football. Or in the fall of the year, we'd play we played with a crooked stick and a ball, a wooden ball. I remember that game pretty well too. Old John Swinson used to be a soldier there. He's in the Pioneer Home at Fairbanks for several years now. Hockey.
Oh, field hockey.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You played that in New Lotto, too?
Mm-hmm. On the glare ice. We'd go fishing down the New Lazarus River. A whole bunch of us would go to the island at New Lazarus, right opposite New Lazarus, and we'd kill every rabbit we seen that day. We'd drive right through the island.
People live on rabbits around there.
Rabbits, moose, or there was no moose yet them days. There was caribou and bear, fish of all kinds, chickens, ptarmigans.
Do you remember when you saw your first moose?
I remember in Tannenau, the first moose I ever I heard of moose around here before that, around Ruby. There was none up at Keokuk. Just bear and caribou.
So what did that moose look like the first time you saw one?
I saw that was not a big animal. I killed my first moose up at Tenno with an old fellow, below Tenno, 18 miles, there was a village there, old station they called. And I went with this year because he said, let's hunt moose. And I decided to go with him. And I finally killed a moose towards evening. And we skinned him and we had to sow us out that night, which was 3-4 miles to the camp, but he didn't want to go back to the cabin. He just roasting meat all night. That's when I found out the moose nose was good and tender right as soon as you kill it. You put it on a forked stick and roast it, and then you butcher the moose while the nose is roasting. It's tender. The heart and the kidneys. But I made a mistake that night. The first moose I killed, he told me to fold the moose, just the hide up. Fold it three times so it'll go in the sled, in the basket sled. I folded up a moose skin and I said, I'm going to sleep in it tonight. With the hair, the skin out and the hair inside. And long towards morning, it got really, really cold. The fire went out. He got up to fix the fire, and I got froze in the skin. If I wasn't there, I'd be left there yet.
You couldn't get out of that skin?
I couldn't get out. I had folded over me and under me. And I was snug and warm in the morning. Yasuke told me to get up. It's time to get up. I couldn't move. Then I learned a lesson. Never sleeping in raw moose skin again.
That guy's name was Yasuke?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Big Yasuke, they call him. He rolled me closer to the fire, and some parts I worked myself out of that skin then. But I swore right there and then I'll never do that again. I haven't done it since. Yeah, I learned a lot of tricks from the natives hunting. They told me never to drink overflow water.
Why is that?
Well, it'll play you out in a few seconds.
You just get real tired?
You either get some twigs or boughs of spruce tree and put it in this hole, overflow water, and then sip the water out, but you gotta eat something with it. a piece of dry fish or if you're traveling you get fatigue or you can't move. I seen white fellas, they wouldn't pay no attention to me. They drink water anyhow and they're goddamn themselves. They're just helpless after that. I always carry a cup in my pack sack. I drink water out of that. I never drink out of overflow since the first Indian told me not to drink in the water. Well, I felt I was a long way from home and I was pretty tired. But I had the stamina in me to go ahead, keep going. That's how I made it.
Well, how about if you heat that water up first?
Would that be better yet? But the last time you fell hunting all day or traveling, you overflow on the Yukon, we dig in the snow. I'd have something to eat with it. I'd always carry a fish, dry fish in my pack sack or cold pancake. Or if you're hunting in the hills, you shoot a spruce chicken and you swallow the guts, tear it open at the belly and you eat that green part of the gut. By golly, that's another thing that revives the fellow right now. Many times I out on a trap line and coming home, I'm hungry or thirsty. I kill a chicken and I swallow the guts and boy, I feel fresh again. Not many of the boys know that today, this young generation. I guess some do.
Well, when you came back down here to Cochrane's and you started herding those reindeer, that was about
23 and part of 24.
And then what happened after that herd all broke up?
Oh, it broke up years afterwards. I came down here before I was married. I came to Ruby and people gave me a job, work. I was, like I said, I was jack of all trades but master of none.
What kind of things did you do?
Only like gas, Tom Dwayne had a big boat. He was going up to Lake Minchuna taking mail carriers with big barge. I made one trip up to the plantation for him. I done little odd work, like clerk in the store. Mine a little for the miners. I remember I went out to the poor man. We had to go 80 feet down the shaft, and we worked two tunnels. Gee, wish that was hard work. 10 hours a day. But the Coyles, and Mrs. Coyle's living yet, I think she's living yet. She's in the Pioneer Home at Fairbanks. Denny Coyle, he passed away about 8 or 9 years ago. They fed good. She had everything on the table. Johnny Allen worked. You heard of Johnny Allen?
No, who is he?
He was a boy down here. He's supposed to won the Fairbanks dog race. He made the best time for 30 miles. He got inducted in the last war, and nobody ever seemed to know where he was, and I kept hearing different people told me, so I wrote to Italy while I was in the store. And he wrote back a short note. I asked him, when you get out of the army, are you coming back to Cochrane? He was married to one of my daughters. That's why I was concerned about him. He wrote back, it was from Italy. He said, why should I come back to Cochrane? He said, everything I owned there I lost. His marriage went to the rocks, and he lost a better dog team than he ever raised before, all drowned in the spring. And he was shot at by a couple of fellas. He said, there's nothing for me at Cochrane to go back there for, so I don't look for me back there any time. And even his son was trying to locate him over some property or land or something. He wouldn't even answer them.
Well, that was in the 30s already then. Or no, the 40s, I bet.
Yeah.
Well, now, get back to about 1930 then. After you were in Cochrane's and You got married in 29, right?
28.
Oh, in 28.
In the spring.
And then where did you live?
I live down here. I go up to Cochrane sometimes. My home was down here. I bought this place up there on the hill where it's marked. He erected the home. I had that whole lot up to Sweetheart's place.
So when did you get this place right here?
Well, the spring. She's renting the place.
Oh.
She just got out of school and she come by Tenno, and. I told her I'd be down about Memorial Day, 29th, for a quick trip. And one morning, it was on the 20th day I was supposed to come down. My daughter said to me, "Are you going? You're supposed to go to Ruby today." And I was sound asleep. She said, "If you're going to Ruby, you better get up then, and you'll have time to catch the NCA plane." I said, "All right." She said, "I was going to go back just down here for Memorial Day, visit the grave." She said, "Joyce, you'll stay at Joyce's." Her mother said, "Well, I've been here ever since."
So you're staying here with your daughter?
Yeah, my grandchild.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I live formerly with Dee Dee or Miss one of them. McCarty's or Donald's.
Well, yeah, I think that maybe what we ought to do is take a break for today.
Okay. Well, you had it on tape.
Yep.